This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.7 in the Matsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site, and you can find all of our episodes over on DogWorksRadio.com. Be sure to check us out on social media by searching for DogWorks Radio. And I am joined today by a returning guest. Her name is Meredith Mapes. She is an Iditarod finisher, finishing her rookie run just a couple of weeks ago. Meredith, how's it going?
It is going.
It is going. You know, it's been a couple of weeks since you've finished Iditarod. That's what we're going to talk about today. But can you introduce yourself for new folks that are joining us?
Yeah. So I'm Meredith. I've been running dogs for a really long time, something like 18 years now. And it had always been my goal to run Iditarod, and I've been working towards that for a really long time now. Started qualifying or finishing my qualifiers really about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and ran Iditarod this year. I was the youngest woman in this year's race at 24, so not bad.
Right, for sure. So you had mentioned that you've been running dogs for a long time. I know when you were on the show just a couple of months ago, earlier this winter, you were talking about sort of growing up mushing and then taking some time off to do college and then jump back right back into it. That's sort of an unusual path, isn't it? A lot of folks that go off to college, they sometimes struggle to come back and join the sport again, don't they?
Definitely, definitely. A lot of people get sucked into the whole life and a job thing, too. They move on once their junior dog mushing season is or seasons are over and don't get back into it. So I'm one of the lucky few, I guess, that stuck with it and still wanted mushing to be a part of my life. And I guess I'm lucky that I still get
calling in from arguably the sort of Iditarod musher headquarters there in Kinnick, Alaska. There's a heck of a lot of you guys that live right in the vicinity, aren't there?
Definitely, definitely. I counted earlier in the year, I think there was something like 10 or 12 Iditarod mushers that were training here in Kinnick. So it's pretty cool getting to run into all of them all season while we were training our teams, too. It's good training for all the dogs.
It makes for Iditarod rush hour with all you guys out there training, doesn't it?
Pretty much, pretty much. I pretty much saw almost every musher every day out there on the trail because we all had different training schedules. So I'd be heading out while another musher is heading back in, and everybody else would be heading out behind me. So when I'm heading in, I'd run into four other mushers. And it was a lot of fun.
So let's start talking about Iditarod. I know that was a huge goal for you pretty much your entire life. Let's start when, you lined up there at the ceremonial start and you knew it was time, something that you've been working for since you were a little girl. Can you take us through those first couple of days on the trail, then we'll work our way down as we head to Nome?
Yeah, the first couple days were pretty crazy. Anchorage was nice and laid back. I had an awesome Iditarider, Jane, who came up here from Lower 48, but she grew up in Nome originally, so we had fun talking about old-timey Nome, and I enjoyed getting to know her that first day there in Anchorage. And my mom was the one driving the not-tag sled. I actually borrowed a tour sled for the first day in Iditarod there, so she was on the same set of runners as me because she's a little worried about tag sled on some of the corners out there. So we made sure to get a tag sled because my mom said probably 10 years ago now that if I ever ran the Iditarod, she was going to be driving tag sled through downtown Anchorage. She wanted that experience
nice.
Too. Yep, it was awesome. Fun getting to share that with her. And then the first day of the race, we had a bunch of friends come out and help out in Willow, getting the team all ready and lined out to go and stuff. So that was pretty cool. We had a couple friends up from Oregon that helped out a lot both days, too. So it was a fun experience for them as well. And once I got off the starting line, it was really interesting getting to go all the way out across the lakes and stuff with all the tailgate parties going on out there on the lakes and the rivers. And I picked up some cookies from some people and water bottles and Gatorade and drinks and stuff from everybody that was out there partying. So that was a lot of fun. Ran into a couple... one of my college professors was out on one of the rivers. He has a cabin out on the Big Sioux, and he had made a big sign and was out there with his family waving and cheering as I went by. So that was pretty fun. And
when did it Meredith, when did it finally hit you that you were doing this thing? You know, there's a lot of preparation that goes into it. You know, you worked on food drops and all that stuff this winter, and things were leading up to it. Mm-hmm. But when did it sort of smack you in the face and you were all of a sudden in this huge race?
I don't know if it ever really hit me. Going through Anchorage was pretty crazy. It was definitely the most human-fueled dog pushing we'd ever done. Like, most races, there's a couple people at the start cheering everybody on, or start or finish or whatever, but in Iditarod, there's, I don't know, 30,000 people lying in the streets of Anchorage cheering you on. So that was definitely a very different experience. And I think going down the steps and the gorge is probably when it hit me that, holy cow, this is actually the Iditarod, and we're going over this crazy technical trail out here. And getting to see
right.
the farewell burn was absolutely awesome, too, even though it didn't really
was
look
it?
Like the burn this year because there was lots of snow.
So I believe I read in your trail synopsis, I hope this was you. If it wasn't, please, I accept my apologies. Did you say that the steps were relatively uneventful, but when you got to the gorge, you weren't quite expecting what you came up against? Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. The steps were actually, in my mind, pretty easy. Of course, I was one of the later teams going down them, so there was already a big groove that was a sled width wide. So once my sled just kind of slid into that groove, it was pretty easy, and all I had to do was stand on the brake and hold the dogs back a little bit and get us right down to the bottom of the steps. So it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. It's definitely not as bad as it would be on lower snow years. We were lucky that there was so much snow on the trail this year. But the gorge was definitely when I was like, oh, yeah, this is really Iditarod. Like, this is real dog mushing right here.
And why is that? Was it just the going up and down? Was it a technical trail? What was it like?
It was very technical. The run between Finger Lake and Rainy Pass and then Rainy Pass to Rhone, I probably dumped my sled, 40 or 50 times combined on those two runs. And I have dumped a sled maybe 5 times in the past 10 years of running dogs. So tells you how crazy technical that trail was, at least for me. And the sleep deprivation definitely added to some of that as well, because you're not able to have the full strength and energy that you normally have to drive your team or drive your sled. But it was very technical, definitely very technical.
And you had mentioned that, I believe, again, accept my apologies if not, but you said that your dogs didn't do very good on hills. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely not. My dogs are very small females for the most part, so they don't like having to pull anything up hills. Don't have, like, having to pull anything at all, really. So every hill that we came to, I was working my butt off and running up them.
Right, for sure. So you also mentioned sleep deprivation as you were hitting that portion of the trail. Can you tell our listeners what that's all about? I know you've done a lot of 300-mile races and things in your career, but nothing really like this where, you know, it may be a few days before you get a chance to really take a good nap. What is that like, especially as you head into those more technical sections on that sort of first third of the race?
Yeah, it gets pretty crazy, especially, like, once you just before you come into your 24, I guess. Once you come off of your 24, you and your dogs are kind of in a groove now and you've got it all figured out. But coming into your 24, all I could think about was just getting there and getting those, I don't know, 10 or 12 hours of rest, whatever I wound up getting on my 24, because I knew I'd get a chance to actually rest then rather than just taking a 2-hour nap here, 3-hour nap there kind of a thing.
Right.
So it was pretty crazy getting into that. And it was similar to a 300-mile race in that I took my 24 in the grass, which is like 310 miles into Iditarod. But at the same time, it was different. It was Iditarod. So it was still a new experience for me.
So as you traveled down the trail, you were pretty solid there in the middle of the pack, I guess it would be. How did you feel about your position the entire time? And sort of to broaden that question, do you sort of know where you're at other than looking at it on paper, you know, in the checkpoints and things? Do you know where you're at in terms of where everybody else is?
Yes and no. I really didn't care where I was. So that was one of my big things was I was just running Iditarod to finish. This was my first time, and that's all I wanted to do. So I didn't care where I was. So I stuck to my schedule for the first, I don't know, three checkpoints that I went through. And then when I got up to Rainy Pass, my team got sick, started coughing a bunch, and I got really worried about them. So I doubled the rest that I took from Rainy Pass and then kind of threw my schedule out the window from there. So I actually moved further back in the pack than I had planned to be. At first, when I started out in the race, I was actually up towards the front for the most part, running with some of the mushers at 10, 15, 20. But when my team got sick there, I just wanted to focus more on my dog team and not really care about where we were going to finish. So I just pulled them back, and we did our own thing for the rest of the run. And then when I hit the Yukon, I actually dropped more towards the back of the pack because we ran into a big storm there on the Yukon and got caught with no trail and trying to push the sled through, gosh, too fresh snow. And again, my dogs don't like to pull a whole lot, so I was having to push the sled through all this fresh snow, and it got pretty crazy, so we took a lot more rest on the Yukon than some of the other mushers did. It took us 40 hours to go 120 miles, which was definitely not in my planned schedule.
Wow. Meredith, I know that you've worked a lot with Iditarod over the years, doing volunteer work and being on the trail for a good portion of it. What can you tell our listeners sort of about the Iditarod machine, just sort of that race that is able to function at a 1,000 miles or very close to it? Can you tell us a little bit about the sense of that, just how big in terms of scope it is with all these checkpoints and all of this support and all of these volunteers pretty much in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, it's completely crazy. Like, I honestly don't even understand how they do it. They have specific people that are working the logistics side of the race, and I'm not exactly sure how many of them there are. There's probably at least 10 or 20 that work in the hubs, and they're the ones that are coordinating all of the pilots that are flying out there on the trail and making sure that all the volunteers get to where they need to be when they need to be there. And if there's a snowstorm or something, they figure out another way to get them there, figure out how to get volunteers off the trail as well. Like, they've got everybody's schedule figured out, and this volunteer needs to be off the trail by this date, so this volunteer from the previous checkpoint has to fly up to that checkpoint to take over for them. And there's at least 2 comms volunteers in every checkpoint, plus dog people. There's a couple people that are just in charge of drop dogs, and then there's the vets and everybody else, and checkers, and it is a huge deal to have the Iditarod come through. And they have so much work to do, too. I got more sleep this year on the race as a musher than I ever got on the race as a volunteer. So it's pretty cool.
Oh my goodness. So what do you think about the hospitality, especially in some of those really small checkpoints where literally nobody lives, with the exception of the couple of weeks when Iditarod is there? How did they take care of you guys out on the trail? Did they provide you with some good food? Did you eat your own? Did you have a place to sleep? Or were you sleeping outside? What was it like?
Yeah, the Iditarod volunteers are absolutely fantastic, even in the places where there aren't people in some of the villages and things. So, like, one of my favorite checkpoints this year was actually Ophir. It was my next checkpoint after coming off of my 24-hour rest, so I wasn't going to stay there very long. The dogs were really fresh, and we had a pretty short, like, 42-mile run going in there. And I actually wound up staying an extra, like, half hour because the volunteers were cooking breakfast for themselves there. And they were like, hey, you know, we've got bacon and sausage and pancakes right here, so why don't you just come in and eat breakfast? I was like, well, you know, I can't really turn down food, and you guys are making food, so I'll come in and eat food. So I went
right in
and ate food instead of booting my dogs right away. So it was kind of nice.
Hey, that's okay. Can you give our listeners sort of a sense of what it's like to travel on the trail? I know I was reading all of your mom's updates as you were working your way down, and we, Alex, my co-host, and I actually showcased you on one of our musher profiles one evening. So we were kind of Meredith fans as you worked on your way down the trail. But the question is, can you tell our listeners what it's like to travel down the trail? Are you pretty much always with someone? I know you said you know you were traveling with so and so back and forth, or were you pretty much out there alone a good portion of the time?
I was pretty much out there alone. I was traveling near some other mushers for a lot of the race, especially like in the middle and towards the end. Towards the end of the race, I traveled a lot with Jason Stewart, who's one of my neighbors here in Kinnick, and I've known his wife, Melissa, since she was like 18, so I had to be like 14 or 15. So we've been pretty good friends for a long time. And I traveled with Sly. He got me through the Yukon, actually. I was having a pretty hard time getting my team moving through that snowstorm, so he stopped and camped with me, and I gave him some food because he didn't have enough food packed for that really long run, because none of us thought it was going to take as long as it did. So we hung out together a lot, but when we were really running, my team would be either slower or faster than everybody that I was trying to run near or with, so I wound up just traveling by myself for quite a bit of it, and it was a lot of fun getting to see all of that stuff by yourself. I had a little wind-up camera from Walmart that I carried. I had like three or four of them packed in my sled, and I think I filled at least three of them up with pictures out there on the trail, so I'll have to get those developed pretty soon so I can share some more of it. But it was awesome just getting to be out there in the wilderness with my dog team all by myself, because that's really what I like doing. I like just going out and camping with my dogs, so it was fun getting to experience that in parts of the state of Alaska where not a lot of people get to see ever, so it was a lot of fun.
Right, for sure. You know, that's one of my favorite things to do. I think probably all mushers will say that. Just getting out there and being with your dogs, who cares if there's people around you or whatever, as long as you're making good progress down the trail, just take some time to enjoy it, huh?
Exactly, exactly. Enjoy the beauty all around you.
Right. So, Meredith, when did you finally know that you were going to be an Iditarod finisher? Was there one checkpoint along the way? Was there a point where, you know, your dogs were just clicking and everything was going well? When did you know, yep, I've got this, I'm going to get that belt buckle?
We had a pretty easy time once we hit the coast. The Unalakleet to Shaktoluk run was pretty hard because that was a lot of hills, but I was prepared for it because I had snow machined that part of the trail last year, so I'd seen it before, knew what to expect, and knew it was going to be a pretty miserable run for me. And then running Shaktoluk to Koyuk, I thought it took forever, but when I got to Koyuk, I looked at the stat sheets and saw that we'd had one of the faster runs towards the back of the pack, and was like, hey, maybe we could do this pretty fast. And then by the time I got to Elam, my team was cruising. The temperature had dropped a lot by then, and it was, I think, 20 below that night while we were in Elam, so the trail set up really hard and fast, and from there on, we really just cruised into Nome. White Mountain to Nome, I didn't even stand on my drag mat hardly at all to slow the dogs down. I just let them go with their speed, and we had the fourth fastest time from safety to Nome of all the mushers, so my team was really cruising right there at the end of the race.
That's awesome for sure. So you knew way back, what did you say, in Shaktoluk that you had this thing in the bag and you were ready to rock and roll. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. I saw the trail from Caltag all the way up to Nome previously. It was a little different this year because the sea ice wasn't really there, so they had to reroute parts of the trail across that and did some more overland stuff instead of sea ice stuff. But I knew, once I knew what the trail was like, that it wouldn't be so bad for me, if that makes sense. I always
right.
like to travel on trails that I know. So, I was excited once we hit the coast.
It definitely helps out there. So, Meredith, can you tell us where was your favorite part of the trail? Where was maybe the scariest part of the trail, if there was one? And where was your least favorite part? The part that was either really boring or, you know, kind of nondescript in terms of landscape. Can you kind of lay it out for us?
Yeah, I have to say probably my favorite and part of my least favorite scariest part of the trail was that Caltag Unalakleet run. It started out great. When I left Caltag, we left right at sunset, so the dogs were cruising pretty well. And just before we came into Old Woman Cabin, like 5 miles out is when it got dark, and I had to turn my headlamp on, and a huge snowstorm came up and started dumping snow on us. So I wasn't very excited about heading out into a snowstorm, and neither were any of the mushers that were traveling around me at that point. So we all stayed a little longer at Old Woman than we'd planned and kind of headed out in groups so that there was somebody breaking trail, and we all knew that there'd be somebody right behind us in case we had trouble out there. And when I left Old Woman, I left in the dark in the snowstorm where it was blowing and snowing like crazy. And there was a couple parts where I lost the trail. I didn't have the best lead dog. I had my main leader, Sarah Jane, up front. And then I had this other leader running with her, Rory, who I lovingly call an idiot. He's a crazy dog that really likes to run, but he's not the smartest dog in the world. So he tends to just go straight as his default. And there were a couple times where there was no trail to follow. So my main leader, Sarah Jane, didn't really know what to do. And Rory would just take a straight, and I'd be looking around with my headlamp, and I'd glance off to the right and realize, oh, crap, the trail markers are almost half a mile over there. So I'd have to steer them through this big open field to get them back to the trail markers. But luckily, they were pretty good at steering, so I was usually able to get them back to the markers. But it was pretty scary at some points where I was like, if we'd gotten off the trail, I don't know how we would have gotten back on the trail. So it was
right.
A really gorgeous run, but it was pretty scary, too.
That's what it's all about, just getting out there and kind of test your mettle, as they say. Get out there and do it and see if you have have it within you to be able to finish, I guess. So let's talk a little bit about your dogs. I know that you've talked a lot on just about everything that you post about, I guess it could be your favorite dog, Sarah Jane. I know you talked to her about her on your show when you were on earlier this winter. How did she do? Is she sort of your rock star still?
She is. She's definitely one of my rock stars. She led probably 90-95% of it around for me. I gave her breaks a few times just to keep her mentally all together. I did her, it can be really hard on your leaders just being up there for 1,000 miles. And she'd run the race before, so I knew she could do it, but I didn't want to push her too hard. So I pulled her back a few times and put some of my not-so-great leaders up there, especially on parts of the trail where it's not super technical, where I didn't need to have her steering us around like when on those parts where there was no trail. So she's definitely my superstar dog, although this weekend at Freddy's Midnight Run, I pushed her a little too hard, and she did wind up laying down on me, so I had to load her in my sled. But then I ran her the second day, and she was absolutely fantastic, so we
awesome.
Figured it out together.
So we start this show off, Meredith. We're talking to Meredith Mapes today, Iditarod finisher, just finished her rookie Iditarod a couple of weeks ago. Meredith, we started this show off by asking you what it was like to realize that you're in this, you're doing this for real. You've been thinking about this since you were a little girl. Let's go 1,000 miles down the trail now. Tell us what it was like when you finished and sort of all of that emotion and elation was a part of you. How did that feel for you?
Yeah, it was pretty surreal. It actually really hit me that we were going to finish when we were going up and over Cape Nome, and I was cheering the dogs on because we were going up another hill, so I was still pushing my sled up the hill with the 10 dogs pulling me, and I started absolutely bawling and still trying to talk to them and keep them pulling up the hill, so they were all looking back at me like, what's going on with Mom back there? Why does she sound so weird? So by the time we actually came into the finish line, I'd gotten over all of that, and I was just ready to go take a nap and take care of my dog team and hang out with my family and my boyfriend and my handler, who were all there greeting me in Nome. So it wasn't really too exciting. And once we got to the finish line, it hit me right before the finish line. So I got through all the emotion before all the TV cameras and stuff got there too.
Hey, that's okay for sure. And then you had a couple of days or so before the banquet. Is that right?
Yeah, I came in on Saturday. So the banquet was the next day. Good night's sleep before I had to focus and look good in front of people.
Right. And then you made it back home, and then you jumped right back into mushing. And as we started off on the show, you said you did a race last weekend, just sort of a fun run down on the Kenai Peninsula called Freddy's Midnight Run. I've watched that race for a few years, and I always want to go down there and run it, but I just can't convince myself to jump in the truck and drive down just for a 50-mile run. But that's becoming a quite popular race down there, isn't it?
It definitely is. We had 10 people running this year, and we had a musher from Wisconsin, plus myself from Kinnick and Nick Pettit from Willow. So it's actually a pretty competitive, good little race down there. It was a lot of fun, too. It was my first time doing a mass start because I'd never done the Willow 300, which is the only other big mass start up here in Alaska. So that was a lot of fun getting to experience that. And it was run on the Caribou Hills trails, which I've never run on before. So it was nice for my dog getting to see new trails, too, because they get bored running on the same trails all the time, same as a human does. It was a lot
right.
of fun.
So I'd have to bring this full circle now. You know, you spent your winter out running your dogs, doing Iditarod, finishing up with sort of the last race of the year. And then I saw a post on Facebook today that you were getting your taxes together and getting ready to file your taxes. So now I guess it's back to the real world, isn't it?
Yep, exactly. I've got a couple of weeks until I go on a short vacation, going down to Florida to visit some family, and then I'm right back to the grind and starting to run dogs as a tour guide again this summer. So we start middle of May, getting back to it, and I have to have a real job again, right? I don't just get to run dogs all the time.
Right. Speaking of running dogs all the time, what's next for you, Meredith? Are you thinking about doing Iditarod again soon? Are you going to take some time off? What are your thoughts?
I definitely can't afford to do it again right away unless I get some major sponsors. So I'm definitely taking next year off. And my plans are to focus on some of the shorter races around the state. So next year I'm probably going to do like the Kinnick 200, the Testamina 200, maybe the Willow 300, stuff like that. A little bit shorter. Some of them are a little closer to home, so I don't have to travel as much and can save a little bit more money next year and try to pay off my credit cards before I attempt to do Iditarod again.
Of course. All right, so we're going to leave with this if we can, Meredith. If you can give sort of that rookie that was you in April of last year, what could you tell those guys? You know, they're just now qualified. They're getting ready to sign up at the picnic in a couple of months. What advice can you give those sort of wide-eyed rookies right now that are thinking about what's going to happen in about 11 months from now?
Yeah, I'd say definitely do as much planning ahead as you can. Like, don't hesitate to have all of your drop bags packed before they're due. I was doing laundry the night before drop bags were due, the morning of drop bags. So definitely try to plan ahead a little bit better than I did there. And once you get to the race, just go out there and have fun. Don't focus on anything else, because if you do, you're going to get bogged down and the race isn't going to be fun for you. So go out and just have fun with your guys.
Excellent, for sure. Meredith, how can folks find you on the internet?
I have a website, funontherunkennel.com, and we're also Fun on the Run Kennel on Facebook.
And do you have any sponsors you would like to thank here on the show?
Definitely. My mom and dad are my biggest sponsors. The CV family, CV's Iditarod. I definitely could not have done Iditarod this year without them. And Planet Earth Adventures, Dr. Brent Taylor, and all of my individual dog sponsors this year as well. They were a huge help in getting us to the starting line.
Excellent. Meredith, it's always a pleasure to have you on. You're an inspiration to the younger mushers everywhere. I know that they look up to you and talk about sort of your adventures all the time. I had a lot of those gals on the show this year, and they really look up to you. So you're definitely an inspiration to a lot of those young guys for sure. But thanks again for joining us, and maybe we'll have you on again when you do something crazy like the Yukon Quest or who knows what else is left in sort of your mushing adventures in the next few years.
Sounds good.
Thank you. All right, on behalf of my guest today, Meredith Mapes, this is Robert Forto. We will see you guys next time. Goodbye.